Governor Scott signs a water bill today, changing the state's water policies. Fundamentally, this despite pleas from around Florida to veto the measure. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show is always live at 9, and now never miss a show. Subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, St. John's River keeper Lisa Reinemann steps into the studio. She's speaking out on legislation she says threatens the state's water. She'll take your calls. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Also this morning, a big party planned for this weekend, celebrating 150 years of Hemming Park in downtown Jacksonville. We've got all the details, plus the Spectator with lots of ideas for your weekend. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, Florida Governor Rick Scott plans to sign a water policy bill today, despite veto pleas from environmentalists around the state and even former Governor Bob Graham. SB 552 is a priority of Speaker Steve Crisafulli, and it was one of the first bills the legislature passed this session. It changes water policy across Florida, everything from the state's natural springs to water supply. Now, in addition to Governor Graham, a coalition of dozens of environmental and civic groups delivered a letter to Tallahassee asking for changes to this legislation. But Governor Scott is expected to sign it today just as it is. One of the groups opposing the measure is our own Riverkeeper. Lisa Reinemann is the St. John's Riverkeeper. She joins us now with an explanation about this legislation, why she's opposed, and details on a major tour planned down the St. John's River. Lisa Reinemann, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you on the show. And what are your questions about this water bill? What are your questions for the St. John's Riverkeeper? Get on the line now, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us or weigh in on Facebook. So Governor Scott expected to sign this bill into law today. First, let's explain what this measure would do.
Sure. Unfortunately, the water policy bills that were recently passed and expected to be signed today, they undermine pollution protection statewide. This is particularly worrisome because too many of our rivers and our springs continue to suffer from and are sick from pollution. They have too many failing septic tanks, manure and fertilizer runoff, and we're continuing to have these dangerous toxic algae outbreaks. And this is on the heels of several years of cutbacks to our environmental programs, as well as lack of enforcement. And so it's really taking our water protections back to a day that we didn't value our waters. And that's not really showing what these waterways mean to us.
You're saying this degrades water supply around the state. The bill is tilted more in favor of industry, in particular agriculture interests.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Exactly. And this particularly targets the St. John's in several ways. One, it does not prioritize water conservation. In fact, it prioritizes alternative water supplies, which is a target on the St. John's because Central Florida is eyeing siphoning more than 160 million gallons a day from the St. John's. So it's making that type of water supply a priority instead of living with our water means. It's also providing loopholes for agriculture to get out of doing their responsible benefits and actually authorizing private funding to take water from the St. John's and put money, public funds that should be protecting our waterways, into private hands that could actually undermine their declining health.
What are some specific examples of why listeners should be concerned about this, Lisa Reinemann, in your view? Because when we talk about this piece of legislation, actually there's more than one bill, it's complicated. So let's bring it down to the level of the individual homeowner, say.
Most definitely. For example, we are represented by the St. John's Water Management District. It's their responsibility to make water supply decisions. It's their responsibility to protect the St. John's River. And we have a voice. There's a public process where we can engage. This bill actually allows other water management districts to make decisions that could siphon more than 160 million gallons of water from the St. John's without us having representation. And so that will not not take any consideration of the downstream impacts, which will be right in our backyard. This community has spent millions of dollars to try to remove nutrient pollution from the St. John's. These decisions made in other areas of the state could undermine that investment and damage the very water quality filters that exist to help our river deal with the pollution that's in it. So the costs will trickle downstream to Duval County.
Your concern is that if Central Florida wins its fight to withdraw water from the St. John's for use to further develop Central Florida, that will further pollute the St. John's River overall.
What happens is it takes fresh water out. That does damage to our wetlands, which are the kidneys of the river. So it makes it harder for our river to deal with the existing pollution, which undermines our investment and will make our river sicker. And this bill endorses all of those decisions that have been made in Central Florida without North Florida having a voice.
Now, you went to Tallahassee and spoke out against this measure. A lot of other groups did as well. Former Yes. Governor and Senator Bob Graham urged Governor Scott to veto this. He is expected to sign this into law today, though.
Unfortunately, he is expected to sign it into law. And we have been, more than 100 agencies, organizations, and businesses have been working for months with reasonable amendments to this bill. We weren't asking to kill the bill early on. We were asking for reasonable amendments to stop the worst of the worst, to fill in the loopholes, to prioritize water conservation, to prioritize protection. And unfortunately, all of that citizen engagement has fallen on deaf ears in Tallahassee.
And are you talking about the Florida House or the Florida Senate?
Both sides. I mean, this was a priority of the Speaker, and so we had very little movement in the House. There was more movement on the Senate side. In fact, Senator Bean did speak up trying to make an amendment to protect the St. John's from these harmful water withdrawals without additional science. But unfortunately, that amendment was not successful, nor were any of our attempts to fix the worst of this bill to make it truly protect the future of our waters and for future generations.
We're speaking right now with Lisa Reinemann, the St. John's River Keeper. We'll go to your calls in a moment. The number to join the show, 549-2937. So as we talk about this bill being signed into law today, we want to move ahead on the calendar to something you have planned for March, late March going into April, the Save the St. John's Tour. You're going to take people all the way down the St. John's River. What's going to be happening?
Well, we are doing the Save the St. John's River Tour, the entire 310 miles of the river, for three extremely important reasons. First of all, to celebrate the beauty and the treasures of the St. John's, her tributaries and her springs. Second, to unfortunately highlight the threats. The threats are mounting. There are many, and we haven't overcome the problems of the past. So we need to talk about those threats and the solutions to those problems. But most importantly is to invoke an urgent call to action for citizens to come together to stand up for our river, our springs, and tributaries, because right now Tallahassee is not doing their job to protect our waterways.
Lots of calls. What are your questions for St. John's River Keeper Lisa Reinemann? Let's go to the phones right now. 549-2937. Chip is in St. Augustine. Hi, Chip. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I could talk for like an hour on this, but I'll try and make this really brief. When will people learn that the Republican administrations don't care about the environment? They only care about the money. Look at the fracking, look at the oil, the pipelines going everywhere, and look what they're allowing to happen in our state. They allowed, over in Gainesville, they allowed a rancher over there from Canada, a billionaire rancher, to drill dozens of huge wells to extract water out to water his cattle, which are then going to pollute all the water around Silver Springs. They've also got to realize that we need to drink this stuff. One day we're going to have a crisis about actual drinking water. I mean, it's already started in a lot of places, and this is our lifeblood. It's not just a frivolous thought. Anyway, and I'll take my comments off the air.
All right. Thanks, Chip. Let me ask you from the other point of view, Lisa Reinemann. Many calling in share Chip's argument, share his point of view. What about the governor's point of view? He has campaigned relentlessly on a platform of jobs and economic growth. And when he signs this bill into law today, it will be from that perspective that he's trying to create jobs. He's trying to create a climate in Florida that's friendly for business. What about that argument?
Well, the St. John's River and all of Florida waters are economic drivers. The whole reason that our tourism market thrives, as well as the reason people want to live here, is for our waterways. In addition to the recreational aspect and the thriving, growing ecotourism, we have our commercial fishing industry. In fact, the blue crab industry, huge in Northeast Florida. The decisions made in this bill could undermine the blue crab industry, and those folks should be outraged. So this actually threatens jobs, does not create jobs. You have to look at it holistically. It should not be a partisan issue. It should be about our protecting our environment, which protects a thriving economy.
549-2937 as we talk water in Florida today with the St. John's Riverkeeper. In a minute, we'll tell you how you can join the Riverkeeper's tour all the way down the river, hundreds of miles from the headwaters all the way down to Vero Beach. Let's go to Ricky on the north side. Hi, Ricky. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to ask a question to the Riverkeeper. If we're in dire straits because of what happened in Flint, and there's all these issues affecting our water supply, we don't really know what is going on in the future. And heaven forbid we have an issue like Flint. And I'm wondering if the governor is even thinking of that. Thank you.
Okay, and he's referencing a water crisis in Flint, Michigan, where the water has been found to have high levels of lead, and it's become a national issue where the presidential candidates and President Barack Obama have weighed in. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Sure. And it should be a national concern. It is, I believe, criminal what's happened in Flint and the fact that they did not get their arms around it proactively. And that's what happens when you have short-term decision-making instead of looking at things long-term and lack of enforcement. The lack of enforcement in the state of Florida, the reduction of monitoring does not give us the tools to know what's going on to prevent crises like happening in Flint. And so I think it is of concern for Floridians based on the actions our governor and the legislature have taken.
Calls from across the listening area and even all around the state coming into the show today. For St. John's Riverkeeper Lisa Reinemann, Jay is in Tampa. The number to join us, 549-2937. Hi, Jay. Good morning.
Good morning. Two quick points. One is, I understand that the water that Central and Florida wants to pull out isn't necessarily for communities that need water. They're looking to do more development for commercial purposes and golf courses and things that I think will be considered luxury items, so not necessities. The comparison to Flint, I think, is important because a lot of times what happens with our water systems is that people don't know there's a problem until folks start to get sick. So these regulations get removed, and, you know, the pollution starts to go in the water, but it's not for sometimes years later that we actually see that, you know, people are getting sick because of their drinking water. So those are my concerns.
All right. Thanks for the call, Jay. Let's talk about the state of our drinking water.
Well, the majority of our drinking water comes from the aquifer, about 90%. And unfortunately, some of the short-term decision-making and some of the lack of protections that are being lost with this policy could threaten our aquifer, because you have tools in place that have been to protect our recharge areas, to protect our springs, and unfortunately, those are getting undermined. For example, Silver Springs, our largest springs, it's a window into our aquifer. It's so polluted, the state of Florida says we need to reduce 80% of the pollution coming out of the spring vent, coming from our drinking water supply, but the tools they are using will do little to next to nothing to improve upon that pollution situation and actually could make it worse.
549-2937, Ricky in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Ricky. Good morning.
Yeah. Yes, good morning. I just want to say that as a citizen and not being an expert on this, I really wouldn't expect Mrs. Reinemann to come up with any other kind of position than she came up with because of her position. Respectfully, I say that. I'm not trying to down Mrs. Reinemann. But I would feel more comfortable if there was an unbiased committee made up of scientists that really looked into this thing. And I don't know whether there has been, or maybe one or two committees. I would feel much better as a taxpayer to listen to that than I would for somebody who, the governor or Mrs. Reinemann or whoever. That's all I got to say.
All right. Thanks, Ricky. Lisa Reinemann, he thinks you're biased.
Well,
And
Ricky, I appreciate constructive criticism and always welcome it. But we do consult with scientists. We do not take any position unless we have a technical foundation for that position. And as I mentioned, we put forth some very reasonable amendments to fix the problems and be happy to post those so people can see that, you know, we're getting involved in a solution-based way, not just to be opposed to the water policy. And we expect our governor to do the same.
Lori on the West Side. Hi, Lori. What's your question?
Hi. I was just going to recycle a comment, and that is that if you want to sell water, all you got to do is poison the source. And it's from a long time ago, and I think that's what's going on. If your only alternative is to buy it, guess what? It's a marketing campaign.
That's a pretty cynical view, Lori.
It's still true.
Well, and in the same vein, it takes a crisis to get people to come to action. It takes something like what happened in Flint. We want to avoid what happened in Flint and make sure we're taking proactive measures to undo the pollution of the past and protect it from the future.
Here's somewhat of a related tweet for you coming into the show. Does the Riverkeeper have an opinion about water farming? What is it and how does it work?
Water farming is unfortunately an inefficient way of storing water, and actually it slows it down, so it actually is storing it away to keep runoff with pollution, with nutrient pollution going into the St. John's. But if you compare another rivers, but if you compare it to like marsh restoration can provide much more filtration at a significantly less cost to the taxpayers. Mm-hmm. And so water farming has some benefits. It's extremely expensive for nutrient pollution reduction, and that's what they're selling it as. So the taxpayers are actually, you know, spending about 5-6 times more than they should for this ineffective way that actually gives farmers something to sell and market in the future. So it's not the best tool in the toolbox.
And if you're just tuning in right now, our guest in studio is St. John's Riverkeeper Lisa Reinemann. Reinemann, among dozens of environmental advocates around Florida, urging Governor Scott to veto a water policy bill she says will damage the state's water resources. However, the governor is expected to sign the measure into law today. Reinemann's going to be leading a tour down the St. John's River called the Save the St. John's Tour. We'll have details on that in just a moment. But for now, let's get a couple more of your calls on the air. Let's go to Janice in Palatka. Hi, Janice.
Hi.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm a third-generation Floridian, and I live a mile and a half from the St. John's River.
Uh-huh.
There are some available techniques to clean up the river, and like every single dock, whether it's city dock or whether it's a private dock, would need a big filtration system on it, and they would have to change the filters like you would for, you know, like a fish tank, and just treat it like a huge fish tank. But we need no fracking, no more extraction for any more agricultural use. And believe it or not, Israel and the surrounding countries over there that are fighting, they're fighting over water now. I've studied it for 5 months over the whole entire past summer of 2015, and that's literally really what they're fighting over. We don't need to join that fight.
Thanks.
And I shall say 10-4 and signing off. Bye.
Thanks, Janice. What's the old saying, liquor's for drinking and water's for fighting over? Or
yeah,
something like that.
For drinking,
yeah,
water's
whiskey,
for fighting over.
Whiskey, yeah.
And it is. I mean, it is something, and we need more citizens to speak out. There are things that are available. There's restorations that are available that will provide so much benefit at such a reduced cost. But this rush for jobs is really justifying very expensive infrastructure projects that will actually cause more damage, like the water withdrawals from the St. John's River.
One more call. It's Dave on the South Side. Hi, Dave.
Hi. The fellow mentioned science. I did my first water quality study in 1975 as a result of funding from the Clean Water Act. And we documented in 1975 in locations all over Florida that non-point source pollution from stormwater runoff, agriculture, septic tanks, etc., was a huge problem. There was absolutely no uncertainty about the cause of the degradation of our waters. And for 40 years, we've had this anti-government rhetoric from the Republican Party that sounds really great to a lot of low-information voters. But what they do once they get in power, they do exactly what Governor Scott is doing, which is they attack the environmental quality standards that have been on the books, and they block any improvement on those standards in favor of short-term profit. They're selling out our kids and our grandkids. And Lisa's right on the money. This issue has been studied and studied and studied. And the reason scientists aren't speaking up is a lot of them have been fired. I mean, we got to take our government back in this case. And it's not by reducing government regulation. It's by supporting the ones that are in place and making them tougher so that the short-term exploiters of natural resources basically make private profit at the cost of the public health, safety, and welfare. It's absurd what the GOP is doing. Thank you.
Lots of calls on this. Let's talk very quickly before we wrap this up about the Save the St. John's tour. I'm guessing you will have some takers because this is a chance to spend some time just going down the river.
It is, and there's going to be multiple opportunities for folks to engage at different spots. So we have SaveTheSt.John's.org, and you can go in. There'll be events, there'll be kayaking opportunities, fishing opportunities. There'll be ways to meet up with us along the tour to, again, celebrate the St. John's, but most importantly, understand how we can come together to stand up for our mighty river.
That is SaveTheSt.John's.org, a major tour down the entire length of the river, kicking off for 13 days, beginning March 22nd. Visit the website to find out more. She is the St. John's River Keeper, Lisa Reinemann, joining us, and thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much, and let folks know they can still call the governor's office and ask them to veto these water bills. He's not expected to sign until this afternoon.
And much more still ahead later. The music of the Hot Sardines as they play a little jazz this weekend with the symphony. But up next, Jacksonville celebrates 150 years of Hemming Park. We'll tell you how you can join the party back in a moment.
When it comes to redeveloping downtown Jacksonville, the best laid plans have often turned sour because of spiraling costs or problems with infrastructure. But despite setbacks, the city has made strides in recent years. In Community Thread Downtown Developing, we talk with the movers and shakers who are transforming downtown and meet others who say challenges still remain. Log on to wjct.org/events/community-thread to submit your questions or to RSVP to be part of our studio audience on February 11th.
Bobcat pelts are one of the most valuable and coveted wildlife products.
If it was all the way to the ground with the full sweep in the hood, it could be $150,000.
We want this black and white, you know, like the Cruella de Vil, where she was all about the white with the black spots, you know, the Dalmatians. Same thing with the bobcats.
The beauty and cruelty of fur on the next Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
One of the ways Detroit is coming back, making high-end watches.
The concept is bring back as much of the capability of manufacturing back into the United States. So the idea of building watches in the United States, something that went away basically 40, 50 years ago, bring that capability back.
I'm Kai Rizdahl-Shinola, and Reviving Detroit, that is next time on Marketplace from APN. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, this Saturday, you won't want to miss the big party in downtown Jacksonville celebrating 150 years of Hemming Park. That's right. The plot of land in front of City Hall was originally sold to Jacksonville for just $10 back on January 23rd, 1866, by the family of Isaiah D. Hart. On Saturday, a free public event will mark the big occasion. Hemming Park, of course, has been on quite a roll lately with events programmed every single day in the public space. At the same time, city officials are trying to figure out how to make sure the park's big revitalization keeps moving on ahead. Park CEO Vince Cavan and board president Dr. Wayne Wood, both now with Friends of Hemming Park, join us now with a look ahead to Saturday and a look back to Hemming Park's storied past. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And give us a call with your thoughts about the past of Hemming Park and questions about what's ahead, 549-2937. Wayne Wood, let's begin with you. I had no idea this park was 150 years old, but of course you, as an historian, would know this. So, very exciting.
Well, when Jacksonville was laid out by its founder, Isaiah D. Hart, he set aside one block, a city block, to be the town square. And during his lifetime, it was just an empty field. And only 5 years after he died did his family have the recognition of his wishes and sold it to the city, as you said, for a mere $10.
Mm-hmm.
And the park has gone through all sorts of configurations over that past century and a half. It was at one time surrounded by big hotels where the northern tourists came and strolled, and you could hear the orchestra of the great St. James Hotel wafting through the evening air as Yankees in their finery strolled through the pathways in the park. And then later the park got into decline. One commentator said it's in such bad shape we should convert it into a cemetery, and at least maybe somebody would put up a few monuments and plant flowers to make it look good.
Oh, my gosh.
And another commentator during the late 1880s said there are cows and pigs roaming through the park, and it's filled with prostitutes and bunco men. And
What's a bunco man?
A swindler, gambler, maybe a version of a smart panhandler.
Okay. Well, we got a few of those still today.
We've actually managed to get most of the bunco men and most of the prostitutes out of the park.
Yeah, yeah, most of them. Yeah. Vince Cavan, what's going to be happening Saturday? Since the Friends of Hemming Park launched, it's just been a reflowering of this space with amazing events programmed every day.
Yeah, so we want to showcase a lot of what we've done before, but also bring some new stuff to the park this weekend. So 150th celebration, and that'll be from 11 to 3 o'clock. And what we're going to have is a whole entourage of different activities in the main part of the park, but we're also going to section off the atrium of City Hall for a members-only event. And what will be outside will be music, acrobats, live painting for kids, of course, a then and now photo gallery. So we're going to have hanging photos from the trees, historic trivia contest with Dr. Wayne Wood, and a bunch of kids' activities with fun for First Coast kids, and of course, food truck fair.
Speaking of trivia, Wayne Wood, you want to do a quick little lightning round of trivia. Let me give the phone number quickly. If you think you know the answer to the question, call in at 549-2937. Dr. Wayne Wood, hit me with some trivia. I'm really good at Trivial Pursuit, but I'm pretty sure I won't know the answers to any of your questions. So let's hear them.
Well, because Hemming Park has always been our town square, it's the place where in former years presidents, when they were elected or when they were campaigning, came to Hemming Park in order to address crowds. And one of the largest crowds was over 10,000 people when a certain president came to campaign. So I'll throw this question to you and your listeners.
Okay.
Can you name 7 presidents who have given speeches in Hemming Park over the past 150 years?
All right. I'll say Kennedy, Roosevelt.
Correct. Which Roosevelt?
FDR.
Correct.
I know this because I follow your postings on Facebook. You posted photos of both those presidents. I'll say Nixon.
Correct.
Johnson.
Correct.
I've got 4 out of 7. Wilson.
Sorry.
Oh!
Gong.
Oh, I get the hook.
Let's see if your listeners might.
Somebody call in if you know all 7 presidents.
So we need 3 more.
We need 3 more. Can I keep guessing?
Oh, sure. I wish you would.
Okay. Let me think. TR? No, it was only FDR.
That's not, no, you got a gong again. It was Teddy Roosevelt. Roosevelt gave a rousing speech on the porch of the Seminole Club.
Well, does
which
that
is on
count?
The corner. Yes, yes.
Okay,
yes,
then
yes,
I got that yeah. right. Okay.
No, you said FDR.
I know, but I just said TR.
Okay,
so
you got
I was
it.
Guessing.
You got it.
Okay, okay. So both Roosevelts, Kennedy, Nixon, Johnson. Yeah. I'm at five now.
Yeah. And the largest crowd to ever be in the park that we know of was when this war hero came to town in his first campaign for president.
A war hero.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, you've stumped me, Wayne Wood. That oh.
Okay. See if your listeners might have the answer. And then
oh, you're killing me.
And then the first president to speak in the park was also the second fattest president of the United States.
Taft
was the fattest.
I don't know who.
And this man came here with his child bride. He had married the young, in the White House. It was a bit of a scandal, and she was a teenager that he married, and he was her guardian.
Madison? Dolly Madison?
No.
Who?
Grover Cleveland.
Cleveland! Cleveland!
Grover Cleveland.
Oh, wait, we're getting calls now.
Okay,
so
we're
when
missing...
When you said child bride, that yeah. sparked up the
so
phones.
So we're missing
Imagine
one. Let's see
that.
If your listener can
Imagine
name the
that.
Missing president who was a war hero.
Oh, gosh. I don't know why I'm blanking on that. I got 5 out of 7, though. So, all right.
That's right.
So, all right. Now, while we wait for that caller to get in the queue, Vince Cavan, let me ask you quickly, as we talk about Saturday's event and all this trivia, you've also been talking with the city council about how to make sure that this amazing rebound of the park keeps going. How do you see this working with the city as you try to work out how much the city should kick in for operation costs and what to do to make sure issues like loitering and profanity and the types of complaints that you deal with from the public don't become a problem for you?
Yeah, so what we've proposed is an $800,000 budget, and we think we can come up with half of that, and so we would like the city to come up with the other half. But we also have ongoing capital improvements, and so yesterday there was a conversation about bringing in about $200,000 in improvements every year. This could be everything from grass, better landscaping, redoing the fountains, you know, just a bunch of different improvements that we can make over the years. So we're now in these conversations with the city council, and Bill Gulliford put together an ad hoc committee around Hemming Park. And so we'll have a few more of these meetings over the next month or so.
Okay. We have jammed phone lines now for Wayne Wood's trivia question. Crystalis starts us off. Crystalis, good morning. Crystalis,
hi.
Go ahead.
Yes. So was it Eisenhower?
Oh.
Chris, you got it.
Oh, ding, 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 ding.
Hi, Wayne. Hi, Vince.
Hi, Chris.
How did I not know that? That's so obvious, too.
Dwight David Eisenhower gave a speech in the park in 1952 in his first campaign for presidency, and over 10,000 people showed up
wow.
to hear Ike.
How could I have missed that? Good Lord. Thank you for the call, Crystalis. Linda in Jacksonville. Linda, good morning.
Hi there. Was Coolidge ever here?
Oh, good question. Calvin Coolidge, did he ever speak?
Calvin Coolidge never spoke in the park as far as we know.
Okay. So what are some other interesting bits of trivia about the park?
All right. Let's see if you can name three freestanding sculptures in the park.
I know the one of Charlie Bennett is
Charlie Bennett
freestanding.
Is
I've walked by that one many times. That's the only one I can think of, though, honestly.
How about the Confederate soldier in the middle of the park?
That's freestanding, technically.
That's freestanding, yes.
Yes, it is. What's the third?
It's a bit of a stretch. It's sort of free-floating. It's the shark in the shark in the park. One of the most popular
icons.
I guess that counts. Each year during One Spark, we've put a different sculpture in the park that was created by the UNF sculpture students. And we, first of all, had the giant yellow duck the second year for One Spark. We had a giant goldfish, and then last year they put the shark in the park, and we were going to remove it after One Spark, and we had so many people love it, we've left it there, and then just as we were about to take it out, somebody said, I want that, I'm going to do a wedding in the park, and I want the shark as a backdrop for my wedding in March.
Oh, wow.
So we're leaving it there until then.
Well, if there is no One Spark Festival in April, at least we'll have the shark. You know, we'll always have Paris, right? We'll always have the shark, Wayne.
We will have something wonderful for whether One Spark occurs or not.
That's right. And we'll always have events every day now in Hemming Park. Friends of Hemming Park putting something interesting on every single day. And as you look ahead through 2016, you're bringing restaurants into the park, not only events, but more food, more music, a lot of stuff planned.
Right. And the stage. Don't forget the big stage that we're planning to put there, which will be a host to a whole variety and a wide scope of events that we plan to have. And a lot of this will be showcased and discussed at our event on Saturday. And the Project for Public Places has put together two ideal parks. And so this comes together after a bunch of community involvement and community voices. And now we have two options that we're looking at. So we hope the public comes and checks it out.
So it's 150 years of Hemming Park kicking off Saturday morning. Come on out and be part of this free public party. Going to be lots of fun. Dr. Wayne Wood chairing this event and CEO Vince Cavan both joining us in studio. Guys, such a pleasure. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Melissa. It's always a pleasure to be here. Yes.
And just ahead, The Spectator with some other ideas for your weekend, plus the jazzy sound of New York's Hot Sardines in concert Friday with the Symphony. We've got a preview for you and a listen to the music right after this.
The lady had dropped her napkin. More accurately, she had hurled it to the floor in a fit of disillusionment.
That's New York Times restaurant critic Pete Wells reviewing a 4-star restaurant. On the next Fresh Air, Wells talks about the reaction to some controversial reviews, the challenge of trying to describe taste, and why chefs are paying too much attention to how food looks. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
WJCT and the Florida Theater are proud to bring me, Michael Feldman, and my show, What Do You Know?, to the Florida Theater in Jacksonville on February 20th. We'll do the quiz, have some fun, enjoy the southern winter just a little bit. You bring the sunshine, I'll bring the sunscreen. Tickets available now at the Florida Theater box office by phone at 904-355-2787 or online at floridatheater.com.
Sponsored in part by Folio Media House.
On the next Jazz Night in America, a look into the music of Rahsaan Roland Kirk.
People were drawn to Rahsaan. They could feel that he was given not 100%, but 2,000%.
Steve Touré leads the band, Bright Moments. That's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, they have a fast-paced, sophisticated sound combining big city style with old-fashioned jazz. New York's Hot Sardines will play Friday night with the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra, a special musical event you don't want to miss. I spoke with band leader Evan Palazzo about the Sardines' unique appeal. Evan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Lots of excitement that you'll be playing with the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra, not the usual fare at the Symphony. What's it like to have jazz with classical musicians on stage as you, you know, really jazz things up, so to speak, on stage with the Symphony?
Exactly. Well, we've had great experience doing it. It is rather unorthodox in one way, but in another, we feel the genre of music we play has a cinematic aspect, and orchestras really do bring that out for us. And some of the great music of all time is written for orchestras, and we feel the jazz we play is also some of the music of greatest music of all time. Of course, Rhapsody in Blue is one of the great examples of using an orchestra in jazz, and I always get these labels confused. Classical, jazz. In 100 years, jazz will be called classical too, I imagine. But we've done it several times already, and each time has been this wonderful adventure. We got to do it with the Boston Pops last May, they provided us with these wonderful arrangements to our existing band arrangements, and we've had the opportunity to bring it to other orchestras. And it's really a fun time. It's high energy, that's for sure.
Your band is winning raves for your interpretation of jazz classics. What attracts you and all of your bandmates to this genre?
Oh, I think it's probably, I always say it's the feeling you get with this music, which is sort of joy in all of its forms, even with a sad blues or a dirge, you know, out of New Orleans. It's a joyous sad, if there's such a thing. And it's a very tricky music to play. It's sort of like a high wire act. It's very improvisational. And when we're with the strings, that still is happening. Our arrangements are wonderful in that they leave plenty of room for soloists, including some of the orchestra members at times. So, it's a joy for us to bring this music to people 100 years after its birth, hopefully with our modern sensibilities, because that's what we hope to point out in subtle ways. But we know we're here in 2016, and this music is just a lot of fun and beautiful.
Excellent. Evan Palazzo, thanks so much for giving us a couple of minutes. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
That's the Hot Sardines. Don't miss them Friday night at the Jacksonville Symphony. Get your tickets now at jacksymphony.org. And in a moment, The Spectator with a look at some more choices for your weekend right after this.
Well, I'm so very diggy-diggy-doo by nature.
By nature!
If you don't say diggy-diggy-doo, you may you'll lose that pop. Let those funny people smile. How can there be a virgin eye?
When being poor muddies the water for a whole city.
Celebrity and money equal power. And if you have power, you get what you need. If you don't have power, you get left behind.
The governor of Michigan apologizes to the people of Flint, but the water is only part of a much bigger story of neglect. Next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International. Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Next time on The World, the future of the auto industry might not be just cars.
We're actually doing some experiments with what we call e-bikes.
For getting around congested cities. This guy from Ford says you could park your car, open the trunk, and then...
you get out your e-bike and you take that around in the city.
Automakers try to figure out what customers really want. That's on The World. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, lots of choices for your weekend all around town. Here she is every Thursday to take us all across the First Coast. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the authoress of a brand new podcast. The star of a brand new podcast.
Star. Co-creator.
The creator of a brand new podcast.
Yes.
TheSpectator.com's Carrie Speckman.
Yay.
Here today. And you have a new podcast up. It's called Another Round
with the Spectator. And DJ Chill Will.
Very nice. And I was thrilled to be your first guest the other night.
We were very honored to have you.
In which I revealed way too much embarrassing information. You can check it all out at Curie's website.
And then even Will is like, am I really telling you that? Why am I telling you this? I'm like,
You did. You asked some very personal questions.
Well, when you are sitting at European Street having some beers.
Yeah.
You tend to, or wine in your case.
Yeah.
You tend to be a little looser with your...
a little loosey-goosey.
Yeah.
All right. So listen to Carrie's podcast on her website. She'll be interviewing...
you go to thespectator.com.
Yes.
And then look for another round podcast.
And you're going to be interviewing all kinds of people on that,
I am.
On that thing.
I am.
So that'll be a regular feature on the website.
Yes.
Now, let's talk weekend events because we've got everything from opera to the circus and more... Today it's Verdi's Aida, opera coming to the Times Union Center.
It is.
Very fancy.
Very fancy. Did you know it was first performed in 1871?
I do now. I do now.
You learned a lot today.
I did.
About presidents.
Thanks to Wayne Wood. I was very well informed.
I knew the second fattest one.
I had no idea about
that. I knew that.
You knew that?
Well, and I knew it was also from the Seminole Club. I know some random things.
You're a golden book of worthless knowledge.
Correct.
All right. So it's Verdi's Aida at the Times Union Center. That's tonight.
That is tonight. And okay. They will have a full live orchestra and chorus.
Okay. Also tonight through Sunday, a classic late night catechism. Anyone raised in Catholic school would appreciate this.
And this, I guess it's kind of a series. This one is called Sister Rolls the Dice.
Yeah. This is at Wilson Center for the Arts.
Yes.
That show's been playing for, at least 25 years. Keeps playing and playing. Also tonight through Sunday, we interviewed the ringmaster yesterday, the Ringling Brothers Circus. Jonathan Iverson.
Yes. He's a very tall drink of water, isn't he?
He really is a very charismatic guy. And of course, this is the last year the circus will have the elephants.
Correct.
Now, he actually said, we're not phasing them out due to animal rights protests. Animal rights protesters, they obviously disagree.
Right.
But this is the last year that the elephants will be part of the circus.
That is correct.
And so, tonight through Sunday at the arena.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I just wanted to say the big cat trainer, you should, if you're a lady, you might want to go just to see him.
Oh, really?
He's really hot.
How do you know
and
this?
And he's English.
Did you meet this guy?
Because I met him last year, and then they have a video on their website.
Oh, okay.
But it's really sweet. Like, I just want to hug the kitty cats because I know they would bite my head off. But.
Now, the protesters are going to be out there again today through Sunday. Their goal is no animals of any kind
Correct.
At the circus.
That's
what they are calling for.
Yeah.
So you'll keep seeing them. In the meantime, that is happening. Now, what is Piff the Magic Dragon?
Piff the Magic Dragon. Actually, to tell you the truth,
about?
I didn't know who it was either, but he was in the finals, I think.
Uh-huh.
America's Got Talent. And he's dresses like a dragon, and he does magic tricks, and he's a comedian.
Okay.
They say that if you can imagine Larry David in a dragon suit performing magic, that's him.
All right.
I'm going to see him Saturday, so I'll let you know.
You'll fill me in.
Yes.
All right. And that's at the Comedy Zone.
Correct.
All right. Piff the Magic Dragon. Also tonight at the Florida Theater, if you love the Motown sound, you need to get over there tonight.
The double whammy of the Temptations. I'm not going to sing my voice a little, but My Girl and Papa Was a Rolling Stone, two of their big hits.
Uh-huh.
And the Four Tops, Baby, I Need Your Loving, I Can't Help Myself.
Now, these aren't the original guys.
No.
Of course. There's one left.
There's one. And here's another piece of trivia. John Bowser of Sha-na-na went to the Senate or something to create a law or I don't know, whatever it is, that there has to
Yes, that's what they do. They make
but
laws.
I don't know if it's a law. I don't know what it is. But there has to be at least one original member in every group in order for them to
Keep the name.
Which I don't understand how that works with the Glenn Miller
Copyright
Orchestra.
Copyright laws,
but you got the Glenn Miller Orchestra. I don't think there's anybody still around in that.
Yeah, I don't know. But,
I don't know. But anyway, there's one member each.
All right. And that's tonight at the Florida Theater.
Correct.
The Temptations and the Four Tops. Of course, they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award winners.
Everybody, there'll be a million songs, you know.
Absolutely. Together on one stage. So that is a special night of music tonight at the Florida Theater. And then Friday through Sunday at the Prime Osborne, it's a boat show, baby.
It is.
It's a boat show. Go on out to the boat show.
Oh, you're not going to live that one down. It's a boat show, baby.
Go on out and have some fun
the boat show. First 100 kids get a free life jacket.
Oh, very nice.
And they have seminars and all kinds of fun stuff.
Now, we talked about the symphony. Saturday, they'll be doing a special program celebrating the impact of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Friday, the Hot Sardines are playing. We spoke to them. But last but not least, I really want to discuss at length the Times Union Center's Star Trek The Ultimate Voyage event.
You might have to do a monologue because I don't really know a whole lot.
You don't?
Not really my genre.
Not really your thing.
Unless it were like the Real Housewives of Star Trek, then maybe I would be interested.
This is a concert all around Star Trek. I find this fascinating.
Well, apparently
I had no idea.
It's the Guinness Book winner for show with the most spinoffs.
That's right. Like, there are literally 2 dozen shows that have just about.
And that's not even counting movies.
Yeah, that doesn't even count all the films. And and when you think about it, the music is iconic.
It's
incredible.
So they're going to have a live orchestra there. They're going to have a 40-foot wide screen. They're going to be showing footage from the film and TV. Never be seen before concert event.
Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times Union, I know, will be in the front row. He's probably the ultimate Trekkie fan.
I believe there's someone here, works here.
Is it Sid?
I think it's Sid.
She will be. Our own Sid Hoskinson, I'm sure. That's Saturday night at the Florida Times Union.
Another little fun fact.
Yeah.
Mr. Spock, what's his real name? Leonard Nimoy. The only person who was in every single episode
of
the original.
Wow.
Yes, I know.
The late great. And go to thespectator.com to hear the new podcast, Another Round.
Another Round.
And go check her out. She'll be recording that every week at European Street.
In Riverside.
It's what night? On Tuesday nights.
Tuesday nights.
Okay. Your chance to meet her.
Oh, what a thrill that would be.
Always good to see you.
Always a pleasure.
That's our show. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchik. Next on Diane Rehm, tens of thousands of Americans are dying each year of overdoses from prescription painkillers and heroin. A closer look at new local, state, and federal efforts to stem the epidemic coming up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow with our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.